and welcome to this very special bonus episode of Our Fake History. My name's Sebastian Major, and as you know, this is the podcast where we explore historical myths and try to determine what's fact, what's fiction, and what is such a good story that it simply must be told. Now, I know what you're thinking. Sebastian, what is this all about? Why are you dropping a surprise bonus episode on us? Well, this is one of those embarrassing situations where I need to make a correction. Now, sometimes when the corrections are small, I'll throw it into the next show, but this time I made enough of a flub that I thought it required a whole bonus episode to address. I hate it when this happens. This wasn't just a classic Sebastian Major mispronunciation. This was a missed historical myth. Now, as you know, I really want this show to be as accurate as possible, and I want my listeners to be able to trust me, but I do make mistakes. So whenever I really put my foot in it, I feel like it's only right for me to fess up and make a proper correction. And while I eat some humble pie, the listeners are rewarded with a little extra content. Now, hopefully this little penance will restore some of your faith in me, or at least assure you that I'm not trying to put one over on you. This stuff happens pretty rarely. Longtime listeners will know that I've only had to do this one other time in the 5 years that I've been doing Our Fake History. But I think this kind of stuff is important because you need to know that when I get something wrong, I'll always do my best to set the record straight. Okay. Now, the first thing I need to say is that I would not have caught any of this had it not been for a longtime listener, Patreon supporter, and friend of the show, Philip Sirkov. Philip is a listener in Germany who's been following Our Fake History for a long time and has been engaging with me on social media for years. He's also one of the first people to ever suggest that I do an episode on martial arts. So you can imagine how bummed out Philip was when I finally did a series on martial arts and then I made a pretty noticeable flub. You see, Philip is an amateur martial arts historian in his own right, and he was listening with a very critical ear. Philip actually writes a blog about the history of karate, so when he heard me blunder into a few classic karate myths, he was rightly disappointed, and he sent me an email straightening me out. So, Philip, I thank you for getting me back on the right track. So, what exactly did I get wrong? Well, the biggest myth that I bumbled into had to do with the creation of karate. Specifically, I put it out there that there had been a weapons ban that had been implemented on Okinawa and the other islands of the Ryukyuan Empire by the second Ryukyuan king, a man named Shoshin. Now, I reported that this weapons ban, which was later picked up and reinforced by various Japanese invaders, was the impetus for the creation of many Okinawan martial arts. The logic here was very simple. Weapons had been banned on Okinawa since the early 1500s, and therefore the local people had to create a particularly effective unarmed fighting style. But, ladies and gentlemen, this is a historical myth. Oh, I should have known it. There was never really a weapons ban on Okinawa. This non-existent policy did not birth karate or any other martial arts style. Now, I should have sensed that this was a historical myth. The whole thesis of that episode is that things are never that neat and tidy when it comes to Asian martial arts. Now, I did notice during my research that the dates on the weapons ban seemed inconsistent between sources, and that should have been a red flag, but I was seduced by the story. And it turns out I'm not the only one. You see, I don't mean to make this an excuse, but this misunderstanding of Okinawan history actually has some pretty deep roots. The first person to claim that the Ryukyuan king banned weapons on Okinawa in the late 1500s was a Japanese scholar named Iha Fuyu. Now, turns out that Iha Fuyu is kind of a big deal in Okinawan studies. In fact, he's been called the father of Okinawan studies. Back in 1911, Fuyu published the first comprehensive modern history of Okinawa and the Ryukyuan Islands, and he was the first person to put it out there that Shoshin banned weapons on Okinawa. He was also the first person to theorize that a demilitarized Okinawa led directly to the development of Tei, the unarmed indigenous martial art of the island. And I'm going to come back to that. More on Tei in a minute. But to be fair to Iha Fuyu, he wasn't just pulling this stuff out of his butt. He actually had a pretty good source. And that source was a royal inscription found on Okinawa that was dated to the 1500s. Fuyu's translation of that inscription seemed to suggest that all weapons of war on the island were supposed to be transformed into farm implements at that time. So he believed there was kind of a swords into plowshares thing going on. Fuyu's theory that this Okinawan weapons ban led to the development of karate was then later repeated by dozens of historians, including the likes of George Kerr and Patrick Bellevere, well into the 2000s. My point is that this particular take on Okinawan history isn't just a bit of martial arts rumor. It actually has a pretty good pedigree. I saw this claim repeated in a number of sources that I thought were reliable. So you could see how a busy podcaster might get led astray. But as my man Philip pointed out to me in his email, just because an idea has a great pedigree doesn't necessarily mean that it's true. So here's the thing. Iha Fuyu's often related idea that there was a weapons ban on Okinawa has been fairly convincingly debunked by native Okinawan scholars. The two men most associated with busting this myth are the Ryukyuan scholar Zenchu Nakahara and the famous Okinawan historian Mitsugu Sakihara. Back in the 1970s, Nakahara pointed out that Iha Fuyu had overlooked all sorts of evidence that a brisk trade in weaponry continued on the Ryukyu Islands during the time of King Shoshin, the man that allegedly banned all weaponry. Nakahara pointed out that Iha Fuyu actually mistranslated the Okinawan language and overlooked or misunderstood parts of that famous royal inscription. Fuyu thought that that inscription decreed that all weapons on Okinawa were to be collected and destroyed or turned into farm implements. Nakahara, on the other hand, said that the inscription actually called for the exact opposite. Weapons were to be collected and stockpiled for the defense of the island. These included sharpened bamboo spears and metal weapons imported from Japan. This idea was later picked up and elaborated on by Mitsugo Sakihara. He translated the famous inscription for himself and pointed out one spot that said, quote, "Swords and bows and arrows are accumulated exclusively as weapons for the protection of the country," end quote. Sakihara would sum it all up like this, quote, "King Shoshin, far from abolishing arms, accumulated them and was proud of his superior weapons. The truth is that Ryukyu never in her history had been officially disarmed," end quote. Wow, Boom. There you go. The belief that Okinawa was the perfect breeding ground for karate because of a weapons ban is simply not true. In fact, this misperception of Okinawa's history, based on a bad translation, was allowed to proliferate because of karate's transformation that I outlined in the episode. When karate changed its name from the Chinese hand to the empty hand, this myth about a disarmed Okinawa helped reinforce the logic of the name change. We were always unarmed, so empty hand really makes the most sense. Except, no, they were never unarmed. And Okinawan martial arts were deeply influenced by outsiders, both Chinese and Japanese. Now, listener Philip also pointed out that even the term Tei, referring to Okinawan martial arts, is also a bit of a myth, as it seems to suggest that Okinawa had one consistent martial arts practice before the turn of the 20th century. Now, in the show, I thought I pointed this out. I did try to say that Tei was actually a myriad of styles. However, as listener Philip pointed out, I should have made it a little more clear that that label Tei was only put on Okinawan martial arts pretty late in the game. When many Okinawans first immigrated to mainland Japan, their martial arts didn't even really have a name. That label, Tei, only came into being in the early 20th century as a way to make Okinawan martial arts more palatable to that Japanese martial arts regulatory body I spoke about in the episode, Dai Nippon Botoku Kai. That regulatory body liked its martial arts named and easy to categorize. So it's during that period that you get this idea of Tei. Finally, I made one other little flub, which I might as well correct while I'm here. I mentioned that the Okinawan martial artist Sakugawa Konga taught a style of martial arts known as Sakugawa Tudi. This was a misunderstanding on my part. Sakugawa Konga was a famed martial artist who started a boom in martial arts instruction on Okinawa, but Sakugawa Tudi was not a discipline. It was actually his nickname. Sorry, I just misunderstood what I read there. So, in the end, a couple little mistakes and one big fat historical myth got through the net during the last episode. Now, I hate it when that happens, because I want this show to be a source for facts. This is where we come to debunk the myths, right? So I'm always embarrassed when I make a mistake that big, especially when I start propagating historical myths. Oh boy. As many of you know, I'm a one-man operation over here at Our Fake History, so mistakes can happen. But I really do try to hold myself and this show to a very high standard. And what I love about all of you is you also hold me to that high standard. I know that when I mess up, one of my amazing listeners is going to let me know. So I'm really thankful that we've been able to create this community where you have been able to keep me honest. Historical myths will not stand, and you, the listeners, will make sure that I correct myself when I get it wrong. So I need to give another huge thank you to Philip Surkov. He's an OG Our Fake History fan. Philip, I couldn't have done this without you, buddy. Thanks for setting me straight. Thanks for pointing me towards the light. When I actually learned the real story about the Okinawan weapons ban, you know, I loved it. And I'm just sad I wasn't able to include that in the original episode. Also, if you're curious about Philip's writings on martial arts and you happen to read German, then head to Philip's blog over at www.karatecampus.com. Thanks again to all of you for listening to the show and for having warmth and forgiveness in your hearts when I make a mistake. All I can say is when I get it wrong, I will always fess up. That's the Sebastian Major guarantee. All right, join me again in a week when we will look at a brand new historical myth. Until then, my name is Sebastian Major, and remember, just because it didn't happen doesn't mean it isn't real.